This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Hello and welcome. I'm Natalie Pynchon. I'll be reading synopses of some of the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery on April 26, 2013. The topics of the articles featured in this podcast are vascular disorders, epilepsy, and quality of care. Radiation exposure in patients with subarachnoid hemorrhage, a quality improvement target. A clinical article by Judith Minghai Wong and colleagues. The goal of this study was to determine if there is an opportunity to reduce imaging-related radiation without a change in the quality of treatment for patients with subarachnoid hemorrhage. The mean cumulative radiation dose during hospitalization was 3 grays, with a maximum of more than 8 grays per patient. The mean exposure from each CT scan was 0.08 grays. From each CT angiography, or CTA, 0.29 grays, and from conventional angiography studies, 0.77 grays. Subgroup analysis of the top quartile of patients in terms of radiation dose revealed a mean cumulative number of CT and CTA scans of 14. A mean 0.5 CT or CTA scans per day, with a maximum of 0.8. 17% of the non-contrast head CT studies were performed just prior to morning rounds, more than double the expected rate at random. 34% of the non-contrast head CT scans did not show any change from the prior scan as documented on radiology reports. When surveyed, a majority of neurosurgeons incorrectly estimated the radiation dose typically received from CT, CTA, and conventional angiography studies, and 65% asserted that radiation exposure is not important or only somewhat important when considering whether to order an imaging study. The publication of this study provides an opportunity to raise awareness of the potentially significant radiation dosage received by patients hospitalized for subarachnoid hemorrhage. The Barrow Ruptured Aneurysm Trial, 3-year results. A clinical article by Robert Spetzler and co-authors. This paper reports the 3-year results of the Barrow Ruptured Aneurysm Trial. The objective of this ongoing trial is to compare the functional and angiographic outcomes in patients randomized to surgical treatment with clip placement and aneurysm occlusion versus endovascular treatment with coil embolization for the treatment of acutely ruptured aneurysms. The final study population included 238 patients assigned to clip occlusion and 233 to coil embolization. There were no anatomic exclusions. Crossovers were allowed based on the treating physician's determination, but outcome was based on an intent-to-treat analysis, with poor outcome being defined as a score of 2 or more on the modified Rankine scale. At 3 years after treatment, 349 patients were available for evaluation. There was no significant difference in the rates of poor outcome in those patients assigned to aneurysm clipping compared with those assigned to coil embolization. However, patients in the clipping group had a significantly higher degree of aneurysm obliteration and significantly lower rates of recurrence and retreatment. When analysis was limited to anterior circulation aneurysms, the results favored clipping. the authors discuss current and previous results in the context of the ongoing debate about the comparative benefits of surgical clip placement and endovascular coil embolization, and the methodology of trials aimed at evaluating these treatments for patients with ruptured intracranial aneurysms. Long-term seizure, cognitive and psychiatric outcome following transmiddle temporal gyrus amygdalohippocampectomy and standard temporal lobectomy. A clinical article by Christoph Bujarski and co-workers. The authors performed an analysis of long-term outcomes in 69 patients with medically refractory temporal lobe epilepsy with mesial temporal sclerosis following either a standard or selective anterior temporal lobectomy. They found no significant difference in seizure outcome when favorable was defined as time to loss of angle class 1 or 2 status. And yet, they found that outcome was significantly better with standard resection when defined as time to loss of angle class 1A status. Further analysis revealed that this difference was due to higher rates of medication withdrawal seizures in the selective group. Furthermore, the authors found no significant difference in the effect of surgery type on any cognitive variables, including memory. Finally, they found significantly higher rates of post-surgical paranoia in the standard resection group, with no differences in rates of anxiety or depression. In conclusion, higher rates of medication withdrawal seizures in the selective group may be associated with longer exposure to medication side effects and cost of treatment, but are unlikely to cause additional functional impairment. In patients with high levels of presurgical psychiatric disease, a transmiddle temporal gyrus selective anterior temporal lobectomy may be the preferred surgery type. Enlargement of small, asymptomatic, unruptured intracranial aneurysms in patients with no history of subarachnoid hemorrhage. The different factors related to the growth of single and multiple aneurysms. A clinical article by Aichi Chien and colleagues. The authors report a retrospective analysis of the growth of small, asymptomatic, unruptured aneurysms with no history of subarachnoid hemorrhage. This is a longitudinal study of a group of unruptured small aneurysms identified as low risk based on the International Study of Unruptured Intracranial Aneurysms, published in The Lancet in 2003. Based on these recommendations, from 2005 to 2010 in the UCLA Medical Center, 319 small aneurysms were followed by CT angiography images without treatment. With an average follow-up duration of 29 months, the authors found that 13% of these aneurysms grew. Multiple logistic regression analysis showed that the number of aneurysms was the only factor related to small aneurysm growth. Because these data also showed that single aneurysms grew faster than multiple ones, the authors further investigated the risk factors related to growth by separating aneurysms into single and multiple aneurysm groups. The results showed different factors associated with the growth of single and multiple aneurysms. In summary, the authors found that multiple aneurysms were more likely to grow. And although single aneurysms have a lower risk of growth, they grew at a faster rate. Bone flap explantation, steroid use, and rates of infection in patients with epilepsy undergoing craniotomy for implantation of subdural electrodes. A clinical article by Eliza Hirsch and co-authors. Patients with medically intractable epilepsy frequently undergo surgery that includes subdural implantation of electrodes to localize the seizure focus. Currently, there are no studies that independently examine the efficacy of bone explantation versus implantation following craniotomy for implantation of electrodes. There are also no studies that correlate bone flap placement with perioperative steroid administration. This study evaluates the risk-to-benefit ratio of these different strategies to reveal the most effective surgical methods for this common procedure. Some of the findings were striking. Number 1. Bone explantation and bone bank storage during surgery may increase the risk of infection. Number 2. Reimplantation of the bone flap is a viable option and does not lead to a significant increase in mass effect, headache, or early reoperation. Number 3. Bone reimplantation may precipitate earlier seizures, which can be advantageous to reduce the monitoring time. And number 4. Steroids do not appear to have a significant impact in the adult population, but may be more effective in children at decreasing seizures and reducing inflammation-associated headaches. Are readmission rates on a neurosurgical service indicators of quality of care? A clinical article by Manish Narendra Shah and colleagues. Currently, early readmissions within 30 days of discharge result in reimbursement penalties for certain diagnoses, including heart failure and obstructive lung disease. But the list of penalized diagnoses may expand. There is evidence that not all readmissions are avoidable, particularly in specialized care models like neurosurgery. This study looks at the causes of readmission in a major, high-volume academic neurosurgical center. The authors classified the readmissions in one of five categories: 1. Planned, 2. Preventable adverse event, 3. Unpreventable adverse event, 4. Progression of disease, and 5. Unrelated. They found that the majority of readmissions were not preventable. The authors conclude that excellent care in a neurosurgical center often requires readmission to prevent further morbidity or death. Thank you for listening to the Journal of Neurosurgery. The Journal of Neurosurgery mobile app is now available. You can find it in iTunes and the Google Play Store. Just search for JNSPG to download the app for your mobile device today. You can also follow the Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group on Twitter and now also on Facebook.